Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes and with me is Jansen Mizurek and a new guest, Jason Folker. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Andy. Jason, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Jason, this is only the second time I've ever hung out with you, so this is going to be a real treat. Jason,
oh, yeah?
Are you an M360, OG?
Yeah. The first alum.
You're the first alum.
T1, yeah.
Wow. How does that feel?
It feels great. Love seeing all the kids come after me. Paved the way, I like to think.
Love it.
And Jansen, you're back.
I'm back. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. how is your Illinois Open prep coming?
The Illinois prep is in full swing. Last week wasn't hit the ball so great. My body felt really beat up and rough. Got that taken care of. Had a fantastic practice session over the weekend. And, things are going. So I'm excited to – I feel like the changes I kind of had to implement and make in the golf swing to kind of just make sure I can play how I want to play are there. So now it's just fine-tuning and confidence building, and I'm ready.
Wait, what did you do?
What do you mean? Like how I practice?
Well, you're like, I've made some changes so I can play the way I want to play.
Yeah. Well, getting ready for the qualifier was just like playing so much that I kind of plateaued a little bit. And so swing just kind of started to get a little bit sloppy. And my takeaway just started to get a little inside, a little around, a little shut. And so I was just coming in steep and my miss was just left. And it was just nasty. So just working on the takeaway, searching for a little bit of loft in the swing, and just getting everything back on plane. And now we're throwing darts again, so it's good.
I know, because we just played a match yesterday, and I shot even par, and you beat me by one. So
hate to hear it.
You hate to hear it. You got a big smile on your face. So, Jason,
yeah.
Whenever we have a guest, the first question is, when did you start playing golf?
Oh, well, I've been playing golf since I was pretty little, probably 6, 7. I've been playing competitively since, I'd say, 7th grade.
Cool. So how did you start playing golf? Your dad? Your grandpa?
Yeah, my dad is big into golf. And whenever I would go visit my grandma, who lived on a golf course in Florida, it was my favorite thing to do, to go out and play that one golf hole by her house. So I did that enough times, and I liked it more each time I played it.
And
I got old enough to start making the whole trek around the course, and I never looked back.
Sweet. That's awesome. So you said you started playing competitively in 7th grade. Were you like a golf practice person at that point, or when did you start coming to golf practice?
Yeah, I started at the golf practice my sophomore year of high school, and I had some trouble finding a swing coach and a group of people that I felt comfortable with sort of working on my game around. So it was, I had a lot of jumping around from swing coach to swing coach, from facility to facility. But when I landed at the golf practice, it was love at first sight.
Can you give us like the inside scoop of like what, you don't have to be like this, you know, this facility was horrible.
Don't have to call anyone out.
Yeah. But like what was that process like, and what kind of things were important to you?
Yes. I mean, I was in my head, I thought of myself as a solo person. I felt like I practiced the best on my own. So I felt a lot of these other camps had, or facilities had, really cool programs that were geared towards group activities or training with a group. And I always avoided that very consciously. And my parents were always saying, oh, that's a great opportunity to train with other people. They'll push you to get better. But I never really listened. So I would go to these coaches and work on my own, just swing tips, normal lessons. And not a lot of them had, they would show sort of short-term results. One swing fix would go well, and I'd drop my numbers a little bit. But then I would sort of plateau there. And then especially once I started getting older, more to the high school level, and I started thinking about college golf, none of them really had the experience putting or sending someone off through college golf. I didn't know how the system was going to work, how to get recruited or anything. So I was looking for people who knew what that process was like. And then I found the golf practice, and Chris was great. It helped my swing a lot. And it also the people around had a great facility to work on the game during the winter, and they had sort of a experience so they could point me in the right direction, saying, here's what you got to expect, here's what you got to do, which really paid off for me.
Awesome. And so did you start coming here like to be in the M360 program or just to start taking lessons with Chris?
I was here initially just taking lessons with Chris for, I think M360 started about a year after I had joined the golf practice. I could be a little off, but I was initially here just to take lessons with Chris and use the facility. And I think he was thinking in that first year about starting sort of a elite mastery, whatever you wanted to call it, a elite skills sort of camp for his students who were looking to play college golf. And I was looking to sort of go that direction, and I was really trying to focus on my mental game, which is something that a lot of coaches overlook. Mm. But Chris sort of had a vision of maybe we can make this a part of the curriculum. And when he pitched that to me and said, hey, we're starting this program, it's going to be a great opportunity to prepare for college and work on your mental game, I was on board. Sign me up. We had four people at the start. Wow. Tight-knit group.
So were you kind of like a head case?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was. I got in my own head a lot.
Like in what way? Like, were you afraid of things? Were you counting scores a lot? Did you throw clubs? Did you break clubs?
Yeah. I threw clubs for a while. That was sort of my big problem. My issue with myself is I would get really angry at myself after a shot, and I would get in my own head about it, and I'd be like, oh, I suck. I can't hit these shots. And then I'd get to the next hole, and naturally I keep telling myself, I suck. I'm going to hit a bad shot.
But and you probably did.
Yeah, and I did a lot of the time. So I found myself playing good front nines and then sort of spiraling a lot pretty frequently. And I got to a point where I was like, you know, I think this might not be a swing issue. I think it's a head issue.
Mm. Got it.
Yeah.
So did you throw clubs?
Yeah. I have a couple confirmed kills.
Wait, like broken clubs?
Yeah,
wait, so you would have confirmed not kills, just throw. So you had so many club throws that like you actually have a few breaks.
I just didn't. I didn't know how to throw my clubs at the start, so I would throw them like straight into the ground, and like the head would pop off. That only happened a couple times.
Is this of a driver or an iron?
The driver, yeah, a driver. I break clubs a lot now, but it's because I swing too hard.
Oh,
and they just get beaten down.
Okay,
I've broken more clubs just hitting balls on the range than I have throwing them, but. I have in the past.
Have you ever broken a club, Jansen?
A couple times. Never out of frustration, though. So
out of what?
I've broken a couple on the range, just like the epoxy breaks. Like I've broken a couple hybrids.
Oh yeah.
I've had I had an iron head come flying off in a bunker one time. Yeah, just like club malfunctions, mm-hmm. I guess.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, that's it. But. So I remember that 3-wood you cracked like a couple winters ago.
I've cracked a couple 3-woods to be honest.
So we're gonna get into like your development, but can you describe like how you learned to throw clubs better?
yeah. So it only takes a couple bad throws. You only got to break one or two clubs before you really start rethinking. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. I had to be still in middle school, and I threw a driver, and I threw it. I'd use too much wrist. When you use the wrist, you generate a lot of speed in the club head. And if you aim that thing right at the ground, it's got a lot of speed. It might do some damage. So if you're going to throw it, I'd recommend throwing it about a 45-degree angle off the ground and just using all arm and no wrist. That way you're not going to get a lot of rotation, and it's going to have a lot of time to slow down in the wind before it hits the ground again.
So like a javelin?
Not quite a javelin. Almost like if you were to throw like an axe.
Like a weak tomahawk.
And not spin it.
Okay.
Just fling it like a knuckleball.
It's like
that
how
way it
far?
Might land like.
How far were these going? Like, did you have to go out of your way to get them?
No, you throw it in front of you. That way, when you're walking, you can angrily pick it up again and be on your way. Cool. I don't do that anymore. But
so, when was your last club throw?
My last club throw, I can't remember. I I've been really good since doing the mindfulness training through M360. I've grown out of that. So I'd say probably the last time I threw a club would be in the year or 6 months leading up to when I started working with Arthur in M360.
Got it. So you got to this point where you're like, man, I'm spending a lot of time like thinking about how to throw a club and not break it. You're like, I need to do something different.
I think most of my thinking came after the fact.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I obviously didn't learn enough to stop.
Like, man, I could be thinking about how to putt better, but I'm thinking about technique and in launching a club after angry swing. I need to do something different. So then you said you found Arthur. What was that like?
Finding or working with Arthur at first?
Yeah, like, did you love it, like, right away? You said you wanted to work with your mental game.
Yeah, so I think I reached sort of a maturity point where I wanted to improve, and I wasn't improving, and I thought, well, it's probably my head, because I've worked on my swing for 5 years, and I'm still at this point. And I brought that to Chris, my parents, and I said, hey, I think this is my problem. They're like, we agree. Then Chris got me in touch with Arthur through M360, and I was in a spot where I could really dive in head first, really enthusiastically. Some people or some kids I've seen go through the program are more hesitant about touching their mental game, but I was all in from day one. Everything he had to say, I was like, that's exactly my problem. I do exactly that. Like, tell me, teach me. And everything he was saying sort of made sense. So I was really, really excited to start working like that with Arthur.
Can you get a little more specific? Like, what were some of those things that, like, really stood out to you of, like, this is a fantastic idea?
Yeah, so I think he let off in one of the first two sessions. He talked a lot about judgment and self-judgment and how it's a natural response to sort of bad shots specific to golf. And right when he said that, I thought, oh, I judge myself all the time. I judge myself so much, and I can totally understand and see how that would get in my way. And he was saying, well, through this practice, you're going to be able to handle that better. You're not going to stop judging yourself, but you're not going to let it derail your rounds. And I thought it made perfect sense, because I didn't think it was realistic for me to never get angry at myself. I just wanted a way to make sure it didn't spiral. And he basically laid it out exactly like that and said, here's exactly what I think is the solution.
So what is the solution? I mean, this is a free podcast, but we got to give people something.
I don't know if I could explain it. It's a lot of meditation, a lot of breathing.
When you say a lot, like, how much?
So I have been slacking, admittedly, in the recent years. But when I was in M360, and since I've been in college, I think I had stretches where I was meditating for 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week was probably when I was doing it the most. And it was a steady progression up to that. But I was started out maybe doing it once a week and then three times a week. I know, Arthur and I have thrown around ideas of meditating for like 4 hours at a time, like the length of a round of golf. I've never gotten to 4 hours, but there's a lot of work to be done.
I've heard some people express interest in doing that, of like building up their endurance to be able to meditate for that long.
Yeah, because it's surprising.
To simulate a tournament round.
Yeah, it's surprising how much it takes out of you. You really focus on one thing for more than 20 minutes and your brain gets tired and you start like, I just want to think about the clouds for an hour. Yeah. But you got to stay focused.
So how did that help you stop judging yourself on the golf course?
So it's about being present and sort of about being in the moment. So if you're playing your round of golf and you're only thinking about what's going on right now, you've heard the phrase one shot at a time. It's sort of that to the next level. It's sort of one moment at a time. And so if you're busy thinking about what's going on around you, what the sensations are in your body, what your breath feels like, where your mind's going, if you analyze it and you don't let it control, you don't think about 2 minutes in the future, you don't think about 2 minutes in the past, there's really nothing to judge yourself about, because you're just living your life right here, right now. Arthur would explain it a whole lot better.
That's good. I probably butchered that. That was good. That was good.
I have a question. How did you start to implement, like, so you start meditating, you start understanding what mindfulness is and like this mental training, but how did you start to transfer it into like your practice and into your play and in a tournament play?
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know if I ever, I don't think I have like a moment or a clear cut strategy I was using where I was meditating off the course and then thought, now this is how I will apply it to my game.
Right.
It was sort of I started out sort of using the concept of getting in the moment before your shot, before every shot during the pre-shot routine. And I put that into my game sort of as step one. Mm. And then the practice outside of the golf course was to allow me to get into the moment faster and, I guess, better. Because it's hard to go from walking and talking to your buddies to right here
right
in the
now,
moment.
Boom, ready to go.
Yeah, watching the breathing. It's tough, and it takes a lot of practice to get to a point where you can do that right away, sort of on command within 7 seconds. So yeah. That's sort of what the off-the-course practice is preparing for.
Got it. That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
So at what point did you know, or what? At what point did you get good?
At golf?
Yeah.
So good pitch for the golf practice. I got, or M360 specifically, I was sort of at a plateau of high 70s golf for probably 3 years. And then I joined M360 and worked on my mental game. And I went from shooting 79 on the JV golf team to playing real well and shooting low 70s. And so, I mean, it wasn't like I was I certainly wasn't a prodigy, still am not, but it was sort of my junior year of high school was my first really, really good season.
And you, again, like, link that more to your mental game than...
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was the one thing that I really changed dramatically between those two seasons for the first time I'd ever worked on it. And it just so happened that that season was the one where I shaved 3.5-4 shots, which is very uncommon when you're averaging in the 70s. So it's pretty clear to me that that was a huge part of why I improved so much.
Yeah, that's great. So then you start thinking about college golf.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're at Carnegie Mellon.
Yep.
It's the coolest name of a school. Come on.
It really is.
How did that come to be?
Yeah, so I think the closer I got to high school before I had these breakout seasons, I wasn't thinking I was going to play competitive college golf. I think in the back of my head, I had sort of thought, like, maybe it's not for me. Like, I like school. I'm good at science. I think I get good grades. I thought I wanted to go to an academically challenging school, and that was my priority, and maybe golf would be the second priority. But once I started finding a little bit of success, it sort of lit a new fire under me, and I thought, okay, I can really make the most of my last two high school seasons and really see where this takes me. And so I had two successful seasons, but I was a little late to the game, so it wasn't like I was getting recruited by a whole lot of schools. I had some people reach out, but I had to do a lot of the work on my own, which also gave me the freedom to sort of pick the schools I would want to go to. It wasn't like a coach came to me and said, I want you on this golf program, and I said yes, and then I thought about the school later. The school was always the first thought. So
yeah,
that's good. I wanted a school that was going to challenge me academically and be a good fit. And so I sort of went around looking with the school as the priority. And then if it had a golf program that I thought I could find myself on, that was a huge plus, but it wasn't the only thing I was looking for.
And how'd you find Carnegie?
Yeah, Carnegie was sort of the school that stuck out to me. That was sort of the best of both worlds. It's a pretty technical school. I major in engineering, so that's a pretty good thing from an academic standpoint. And the team was not going to be a challenge for me to make my way onto. And I had talked to the coach, and he said I would have a place there if I played. And I ended up coming down to going to the University of Illinois at Champaign or to Carnegie Mellon, and they're two very different experiences, one with golf, one without. Similar academic rigor. And so I thought, if that's going to be what it comes down to, I'm going to choose golf over no golf. And I'm in a pretty good spot now.
Nice.
Probably a good choice.
I think so.
I would agree.
And you just finished your sophomore year.
Yep.
And you're going into junior year.
Yep.
When I first met you, you'd finished your sophomore year, or your freshman year mm-hmm. last summer. And you were kind of in and out of the top five or not in top five freshman
yeah.
year.
Yep.
So you get there, you're on the team. It doesn't mean you're going to play.
Yeah.
Was it more competitive than you thought?
It was about what I was expecting. I went out there, and it's a huge, huge transition going from high school to college golf, and I don't think people talk about it a lot.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
I think just going from high school to college in general
yeah.
is like a huge life-changing
oh, yeah.
moment, you know?
And imagine trying to keep your swing fine-tuned while you're making this huge life change. It's really yeah. tough.
And you're moving out of state.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You're not That's by crazy. Your family, your swing coach.
Yeah, home course.
It's difficult, yeah. yeah. So I really struggled with that. I was in a good spot going into school, and then things started to shift. I had a good start to the year, but then my swing was in a place where I was really close to going past a point that would basically make it tough for me to even hit the ball. I was doing something bad in the backswing and then recovering on my downswing with a weird move. But once I get to a point, that didn't become repeatable. And so I wasn't prepared to sort of really be looking at my golf swing every day. Because when you're over here in the summer, when you're at home, I mean, I was playing golf every day. I was looking at my swing every other day. So there was no chance for anything to get away from me. But when I got to school, golf was one of the last things on my mind for those first
yeah,
weeks.
Totally.
So things started to move, and I wasn't prepared for it. And I didn't really have the tools to really get myself back in check. So I spent my entire freshman year fighting to even be on the travel roster. And I think I was averaging back into the, like, I think I averaged as like a 79. It was just a really uncharacteristically bad season. It was just because I was unprepared for what I was getting myself into.
Yeah. So how big is the team?
Yeah, the team is really big, but it's getting smaller. We had 18 guys my freshman year, and only six traveled at any given time max, and there were only about...
When you say traveled, do you mean like play in a tournament?
Yeah, play in a tournament, which in our case is usually a bit of a hike away from school.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, okay. We play a lot sort of around down south or in Ohio. The school's in Pennsylvania, so it's not ideal golf weather most of the time in the spring and fall. So we get out as much as we can.
Got it. So you get there. Did you get there early to school when your freshman year?
We didn't get there early for golf. I was there a week early for orientation, but that wasn't it wasn't like I was spending the time golfing.
And then how much time was there between when you got there and your first tournament?
I think we had 3 weeks.
Oh, that's
and it was time. A lot of qualifying, which was another thing I wasn't prepared for. So you got to prove yourself. No one here is just going to take your high school record and be like, oh, you're traveling now.
Yeah.
You really got to put up some numbers. And that was
so
another.
How many rounds were there?
There were a lot. I don't remember the exact number, but it had to be close to 10 rounds before we got to that first tournament. Probably more, but not all of them counted officially.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a lot of golf, and it was a lot of competitive golf, qualifying golf. Which is a beast.
And how'd you do in those? Did you qualify?
I didn't. I don't think I went on the first. No, I didn't. The first tournament, we took everybody. And I played really well in the first tournament, but my qualifying scores had been so-so.
Got it.
So I didn't go to the second tournament, which was the first travel tournament where they only took five or six guys.
Okay.
And then I played in one other tournament because the coach had set the roster before the season had actually started, and he said, oh, this Folker kid looks pretty good, like, let's take him. And then I went out and I all of a sudden was playing like bad, and he was kind of regretting that decision. I didn't play well that tournament.
I got it.
But that was the only time I traveled freshman year.
Okay. How'd that feel?
It felt horrible. I wasn't expecting that feeling of going there and being not one of the go-to guys because I had been sort of a go-to guy on my high school team for the last 2 years. So I was pretty shaken up by it. And it at first, it was really sort of depressing to be on the outside looking in. But it also, especially after the fall season over winter break, it really lit a fire under me, like more than anything else really had been, to be like, I just averaged 79 in the fall. That's ridiculous. I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure that never happens again. And I mean, it was, I still think about it, about how bad that felt to be sort of on the outside like that, to play as bad as I did. So it's a tough one to deal with. I'm still dealing with it.
Wow. And so what did you do when you're like, I need to get this in gear? Like what specifically were you like, I got to do this better?
Yeah. I mean, I think I had my mind immediately went to sort of, I have to be better mentally because I felt that was, I think I'm sort of biased to thinking that everything's a mental problem now, but a lot of times it is. I also knew that I needed to spend more time working on my swing daily. I would practice a lot where it was one day on, 2 days off, one day on, one day off. And you don't really make improvements like that. You can maintain your swing by doing that, but it's going to be tough to sort of make any positive swing fixes if you're not playing consistently. So I knew that that had to change. I also hadn't been in really close contact with Chris while I was over there, so I didn't have a set of eyes, a really trained set of eyes on my swing at all times. So there was just a host of things that I thought it could be. And when I got back over winter break, I sat down with Chris and I said, I need to get to the bottom of this, what it was, what I'm going to do better. And we talked and we set a plan, and I worked hard over that winter break to get into a spot where I would come back in the spring and play much better. Unfortunately, the spring was so cold, we basically didn't have a spring season because all the tournaments got snowed out. But the game was in a better spot, just no one saw it.
It's Carnegie Mellon. I mean, they're no joke. Like, the school is trying to get a national tournament every year.
Yeah, yeah.
What conference are you in?
We're in the UAA, which is not an NCAA. It's an eligible conference, but we don't get an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament. So our conference championship's four teams, but that's the conference the school is in.
Got it. And so is it that you typically win that, or Carnegie Mellon typically wins that every year?
So no, it's a very competitive conference. Emory in Atlanta is in that conference, and they are the number one ranked team in Division III men's golf. And we were ranked highly too, just not number one.
Got it.
So it's tough to beat those guys. We don't usually beat them. We've come close, but
Emory's in what city?
Atlanta.
You're in a conference with someone in Atlanta?
Yep, Atlanta, University of Rochester, and NYU.
Rochester,
and
New York.
A bunch of other schools that don't have golf programs. University of Chicago's in the UAA.
That's weird.
Yeah, we're all over.
Let's really get into like why conferences are the way they are. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Let's really take a turn. But you got, so sophomore year, let's get into it.
Yeah.
You're back.
That was the fun season sophomore year.
So were you like a little nervous going back?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I as much as I worked hard over that winter break, I worked just as hard over the summer to make sure I was on my A game going back. And I don't think I've ever played better golf than I did in the weeks leading up to when I left back for school.
And so your A game, like how would you... Like, what courses are you playing, like, around here, and, like, what are you shooting that's, like, your A game?
So I wasn't really playing a whole lot. I spent a lot of time in the cube during the summer to work on TrackMan and video, and I was doing the combine a lot. And I was getting some really impressive scores on the combine. I don't remember exactly what they were. They were in the 80s, maybe even high 80s. I have them on my phone, but...
I think we've posted your score like 88.
Have you finally put it on on the whiteboard?
Yeah. It's high 80s, which is like, it's really impressive.
It was, I have a video of my swing from those weeks saved on my phone. And every time I feel like I look at a swing video and I'm like, well, that was a bad shot, but the swing doesn't look bad. I use that video as my comparison. It's my golden rule. That's how good I felt. And my to put it in context of a round, my last round before going back to school, I played with my dad at Prairie Landing, and I was shot bogey-free 5-under, which was the best round of my life to that point. So I was on some fire.
Yeah.
It's a good round.
And so you go back.
Yeah.
You got 10 more rounds of qualifying.
Yep. And I stayed on my A game this time. I put myself in a spot where I was playing like one of the best two or three guys on the team throughout the whole year. During qualifying, I think I had the first or second lowest qualifying average. So after the first 2 weeks, in my mind, there I wasn't even thinking about, oh, am I going to make the team or not? I was thinking about, okay, now I have to worry about performing at these tournaments. So it was a completely different ballgame right from the start because I did enough early on to cement myself in that lineup.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And the stress of having to qualify week to week is pretty immense, and I don't think I handle it the best. I think I thrive way more in an environment where there's a little trust and I can go and do my best and have a little confidence in myself instead of having to worry like, is this guy going to beat me and am I not going to get to travel? So that was how it was, and I played a lot better.
How does your team or your coach like do the qualifying? I'm always interested.
Yeah.
At North Park, in the past we've only had like five guys who are in the team. You know, we've had a team of eight, but it's like five or six clear guys, so it hasn't really been like week to week.
Yeah.
This year it's looking a little different, but I'm interested in seeing how each team does it differently.
So our team, we have sort of some people who are in the lineup week to week. That included me.
Based on numbers or coach's decision?
So based on mostly numbers. If you played the best, you still had a spot for the next week. So if we went to a tournament and two guys went under par, the coach will draw a line saying, okay, you two, you're in the lineup. You guys have to play for your spots. But the way he does the qualifying that next week will be a mix of who had the best scores and who do I want to take. He'll kind of use his own judgment where he sees fit, so we don't have someone who traditionally doesn't perform have a career weekend and now we promised that we'd take him. So he keeps a hand on the process the whole time, but it's a lot of earning your ticket.
So it's like the qualifying will be like you're playing 18 holes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and the top three.
Yeah, it'll be
get in the five. You know.
Yeah, it'll be like we got one weekend before the next tournament. You five guys have to play two rounds. Lowest score is in automatically, and then the second guy I pick. The coach will pick.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that usually is the second best score, but not always.
Does the team like that? Has there ever been a time where you like pick someone else and guys? I mean, I'd be kind of upset.
The team,
right?
It hasn't been a problem yet. We had problems my freshman year where people who kind of played well out of nowhere got to go on these trips over people who had been consistently performing and maybe had one bad round and lost by a shot to the guy who just played really great. And that frustrated the team more than the coach maybe picking the second best option for a tournament. Some of the guys naturally, when the coach passes them over for a spot on the tournament, it's a bad feeling. Everyone wants to go, but it's also, it hasn't been, if coach is picking between two guys, then there really isn't a bad choice. Like you're both probably playing the same golf. So I haven't heard any people get really upset about that.
Got it. Got any questions for this guy?
One
about question. Us? I mean, Jason and I are steeped in the world of NCAA Division III golf, and you're kind of on the outside in. So
I know.
You're just slurking over there.
I know. Yeah. I'm taking it all in. One thing that I always find interesting for like college golf is like what's your preparation like the week of a tournament, especially when you guys are traveling so far away. Like what is the kind of the travel look like? What does the prep look like for that week? Because I imagine that week is like jam packed with like a lot of golf. And like how do you prepare like in a practice round and then play And then, and how do you like keep up with your academics too?
Yeah. So Carnegie Mellon's unique. This is the experience I have week to week is certainly not what every other college golfer feels. Carnegie Mellon's a really academically rigorous school, and I don't really say that lightly. It's a lot of work. So I'll play these tournaments and we'll miss, because college golf tournaments usually are Monday, Tuesday, oftentimes, which is two missed days of classes. So I will get back on Tuesday night, and let's say we have another tournament the next weekend, the next Monday, Tuesday, which happens every so often. I'll get back and I'll spend all of Wednesday and Thursday just making up what I missed, right? Tests, homework, assignments, because in order for me to have the freedom to not work on that while I'm at the tournament and just focus on golf while I'm there, I have to spend those days when I'm at school not thinking about golf. Right. So I won't even practice a lot of the times on that Wednesday or that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But I'll get out on Friday and I'll go to the range and I'll have to figure it out because we leave Saturday morning to go do it all over. So I do have I guarantee you that most college golfers are a little more on the golf course than I am and my teammates are. But it's been really interesting trying to make that work because on one hand, I just got done saying I needed to really keep an eye on my swing day to day, but I'm also saying I don't have the time to do that. So it's kind of right. A challenge, and I golf where I can, but it's usually like a 30 minutes to an hour in our simulator in the gym, or maybe 9 holes if I really have some free time. But I'm not living the kind of college life where I can just leave class or ditch my classes in the afternoon and go play 18. Balls, yeah.
Do you guys have structured practice or is it just do what you can?
We don't. Yeah. Our coach tells us, hey, I want you guys to maintain 8 hours of practice a week at least. And he'll say, I want you to log it all and tell me when you're practicing, because he recognizes that a lot of kids are going to have days where I have a midterm tomorrow. It would be irresponsible of me to just not spend this whole night studying. And so he lets people do that, which I really appreciate. Being in engineering, I have had those nights where it's like, I need to study. I can't spend 3 hours on the golf course. But he expects that we're all putting in the work when it works for us. So everyone has at least 8 hours they can take out of their schedule for golf. And if you can't, then why are you on the golf team?
Right.
So he says, as long as you're doing what you can when you can, and your scores still have to stay at a certain level, then he's fine with us sort of practicing at our leisure. We don't really have a team meeting on the putting green every 4:30.
Got it.
Yeah.
Cool. So the NCAA Division III national tournament, each, I guess, like, what'd you say, recognized conference? Is that what you call it? Like, gets an automatic bid into tournament, kind of like March Madness and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I guess, except for the UAA.
Yeah. It's not.
What does UAA stand for?
University Athletic Association.
All right.
Yeah.
Wait, why aren't you, like, recognized?
We don't have enough teams.
How many do you have?
It's not a matter of being recognized or not. It's just, in order to get an automatic berth into the tournament, you have to have a conference championship with at least 7 or 8 teams.
Oh, so the other schools in your conference don't have a golf program.
Exactly. So, well, I mean, if that wasn't the case, what would be stopping whatever school to pick on the school across the street that's way smaller and be like, you and I, we're a conference now, and one of us is going? That seems kind of unfair. So I understand the rule, but it kind of hurts us because we have to get in based solely on rankings, our national rankings.
Yeah, and there's not that many, like, at-large bids. Like,
yeah, there aren't. There are Pool B and Pool C bids. Pool A's are the automatic berths. There were, in the past, 2 Pool B's, which go to schools like us without a conference to play in.
Two?
Two teams out of the whole country. And one of those is Emory, who's in our conference and is the best team in all of Division III.
Got it.
Yeah, and then Pool C is the best of the rest. If the number 2 team in the nation lost their conference championship, they're the number 2 team. They're going to get a Pool C bid.
Got it. So is Emory in every tournament you guys play in?
Basically, yeah. We see them a lot. We play, so our schedule is the most competitive in the division. We pretty much don't play a tournament unless all the best teams are going to be there, which helps us in two ways, because we get to see the best competition. And also, if we lose to everyone in that field, they're all ranked inside the top 20. Like, our ranking can't really fall that low. So it's great to be in that competition for a lot of reasons. And we see the best the whole year.
Got it. And so your freshman year, you guys didn't get the bid. Sophomore year, what were those spring tournaments like? Was it, did you win? Did you?
So we, it's actually a, we pretty consistently finished fifth, sixth, sometimes maybe even seventh in all these tournaments, which kind of sounds not very glamorous, but from a placing standpoint, if you looked at the teams who beat us, it was always the 1, 4, 5, 6 teams that beat us. And so we're like, well, fine, like, we'll lose to them. Like, they're supposed to beat us. As long as we beat the team that's ranked 32, our ranking is going to stay the same. So we kind of attacked all these tournaments with a preservationist mindset. We got to where we wanted to be early in the season. We were ranked 13th, I think, from the start, and we knew that would probably be good enough if we stayed there. So I looked at all these leaderboards, and we don't usually beat those teams at the top. They're really, really good, but we can definitely beat the teams who are in the next tier down. So that was sort of how the team was focusing on every single tournament was, hey, we have to show up, because if we lose to these guys, we might lose our bid. All it takes is one bad loss to one bad team. One bad event could really tank your ranking.
And when you say these teams are really, really good, like Emory, what are they scoring as a team?
Yeah, so any one of their guys could go 3 or 4 under on any given day. So their team will always be around par every round.
So the way the scoring works is there's 5 players who play and they take the top 4 scores.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're getting 4 scores around even par.
Yeah, they're...
I mean, that's better than, like, some D1 teams.
Yeah, they're... Sure. So they... I think that team and a couple others could be competitive at Division I, not with Oklahoma State or Illinois, but if they were a Division I team, they wouldn't just get steamrolled.
Yeah.
So there are definitely some really good competition in Division III, Division of Champions.
Yeah, I guess so. So is your coach, like, talking about the rankings, like, weekly?
Yeah, it's a big deal for us, because the end goal is always the national championship, and so we're going into every tournament primarily thinking, let's do what we can to play our best, and winning it would be great, but if we play bad on the first day and say we drop behind Kenyon, ranked whatever they are, lower than us, then it becomes, all right, guys, you have to play well because we have to beat them. And our coach will let us know, like, hey, we can't lose to these guys. You guys know just as well as I do that would be bad news. So we had a lot of do-or-die situations, and our team was really good at rising to the occasion.
You have an example of one of those?
Yeah, I mean, I have a couple. I think, I can't remember, or one of the tournaments, our last tournament, I have a different story that sort of embellishes my own myself, so I'm going to tell that one.
All we do on this podcast is talk about ourselves.
Yeah,
so.
we played a tournament in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and it's not an extremely competitive field by our standards. Now, they're not bad teams by any means, but they aren't the best in the nation like we're used to playing against. We went into this knowing we had to get first or second, and that was sort of the goal.
Out of
a field of 12 to 18. I think it might have been a bigger field, but so we went into the first round and played pretty bad as a team. Our number one guy played bad. I felt like I played bad.
What did you shoot?
I shot 76 with like a triple, I think.
It's like, for context, like, if someone at North Park Division III, if one of our guys shot 76, that would be like the best round of the year.
School record?
Well, I'm not trying to, like, make a joke about the team that I coach. I'm just saying, like, giving context of, like, the different kind of levels of division.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, we're a lower level Division III team right now, mm-hmm. who's, like, working towards, you know, where you guys are at.
Yeah.
And so, like, 76 for us would be good, so I'm interested to see that, like, 76 mm-hmm. is, like, I'm pretty disappointed with that.
Yeah, and our team was there in that same boat. Really, like, anything in the 70s would have been great for our team as early as, like, few, like 10 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
So I understand what it's like to be at that level, because I see a lot of teams over there. But that was a lot. There were some teams like that in this tournament that we knew we couldn't really lose to, because they're ranked 100th and we're trying to be in the top 20. So,
got it.
And we got into the second round behind the eight ball. We played bad on the first day and we had to show up, and everyone knew it. And it wasn't like that was all we were thinking about. In the end, everyone's just going out there to play the best round they can. But we were in a position I was the last guy to come through into the clubhouse, and I was asking my coach, like, how are we doing? Like, did we climb the leaderboard? Where are we at? And he was giving me vague answers like, par, we need a par here. Like, you got to get a par. And I was thinking, like, okay, fine. And I get on, he walks up with me on 18, and it's like a 2-iron wedge hole. It's nothing too difficult. And I leave myself like a 25-footer tough putt for birdie. And I asked my coach something along the lines of like, oh, like, I'm just going to go ahead and make this. And he goes, like, that would be huge, and, like, walks away. And I was like, do I really need to make it that bad? Like, I just kind of said that as a joke. And then I got up and I made the putt. And we went from third place to tied for second. And a tie against a team it's like a no blood on the ranking. So it was a team that we needed to beat. And I made the birdie to tie them. And it was I think, I don't want to embellish how big of a deal it was. It wouldn't have ended our season if I had missed that putt, but.
Like, maybe you don't make it in the Nationals.
Yeah,
well,
maybe, like, our ranking drops a couple.
Yeah.
We lose to the team that's ranked 45th, and we accumulate, like, if that team goes on and loses to all the teams that are around us, then we accumulate their loss behind the curtain, behind the scenes. So if that team loses to another team that's, like, ranked right with us, especially if they're a Pool B team, then all of a sudden that really hurts us. So you never know what can happen when you lose to just one team. I don't think in this case it would have made a huge difference, because this was late in the season, but, I mean, it's just goes to show how kind of a big deal it is. And my coach was so excited when I made that putt. And I didn't understand the gravity. I wasn't looking at the leaderboard, but I looked at him, and he was happy that I made that putt. I was like, oh, geez.
That's awesome.
And I got in the clubhouse and learned we tied for second, baby.
That's great. And so how much time is there between your last tournament and when the at-large bids are announced?
There's a long time, honestly. It's more than 3 weeks, or 3 weeks probably, between our last tournament.
When's your last tournament?
I think it was in mid-April or early April.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then the at-large bids came out
a
week before the national championship, yeah, which was in the middle of May. So we knew that we were going to get in.
Oh, you did know, based on your ranking?
Yes, because we know who the Pool B teams are. We knew what our ranking was going to be roughly, and we knew that we were going to be one of those teams. I mean, I say no, but anything can happen. Our girls' team is in the same boat as us, and they got snubbed. They took some teams below them instead of them. So anything can happen, but we were pretty confident this year. But if you're on the bubble, that's a whole month of we're practicing like we're going to be in the national championship, but a week out, we don't know. So parents are booking flights and hotel rooms to come watch, but it's a sticky situation because it's unsure.
How did you find out that you were in?
I think my coach sent he just sent us a text with the announcement, the official announcement with the caption, "We're in!" exclamation point. And so I kind of was expecting that. Yeah. So
your coach like gets a text.
Well, he's like probably spamming refresh on he probably gets an email.
Got it.
He finds it from somehow.
It's not like the selection show where you guys are sitting around watching TV and ESPN's
nothing that
there.
Fancy.
In your bougie suits.
Yeah.
Get the phone call.
Yeah. Hug the family. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Not so quite. Where was the tournament held this year?
It was at Keene Trace Golf Club in Lexington, Kentucky. That's where they have the Barbasol tournament, if you're familiar.
Which is this week.
Yeah, I played that course.
And so, yeah, what was that like? Take us to like the week leading up to that, and then like go through it.
Well, the week leading up to that was my finals week.
Oh, rough.
So I mean,
did you just blow them off or?
No, I it was a lot. I spent, I mean, it was just normal finals week, a whole lot of studying, and there weren't classes going on, so it wasn't like I couldn't do both. I couldn't spend an hour hitting balls and then also studying all night. So, but it was interesting or weird because most other college athletes, a week out of their national championship, that's all they're thinking about is time to perform. I was thinking about how I'm going to finish these classes and take these finals. So I didn't start really shifting my entire focus to golf until a day before the tournament started, because I had to take a final even while I was in Kentucky. That's how much overlap there was between the national championship and our finals week. And it was a challenging one. It was a really, really long 2 week stretch going from studying late into the night and taking stressful tests to waking up early in the morning and playing stressful golf for 2 weeks straight.
How early did you guys go down there?
We were there on Saturday, the Saturday before the tournament started, and I can't really remember which days of the week it was on, but we had 2 or 3 days before the tournament to play practice rounds.
And what did you guys do as a team for those practice rounds? Did you just play? Did your coach help a lot? What kind of things?
Yeah, we played as a big group, as a five-some. Our coach was out there making sure we knew where the landing areas were. He was making sure people didn't have any stupid ideas in their head, like no kid's going to pull driver on the hole that's really tight. But for the most part, it's a little bit laid back. We did have a level, an electric level, I guess, that we put around the hole locations to map out what the slope's going to be like. And that sounds like way overkill.
You guys are engineering students. So
you guys, Bryson.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of what it's like. But I mean, I tell you, it helped me a lot.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. We need like the next hour needs to be spent on your electric level around the hole locations. Okay. So, like, go.
Okay. So imagine a level
I understand what the level is.
You understand the level part. Yeah. Okay.
For picture frames and stuff.
The tournaments will usually put little dots where they want the hole locations to be. And so we'll go out there with this level and we'll map around the hole 4 feet away, 8 different positions around the clock. And I'll be over there just dragging it along, yelling out the numbers. My coach will be there writing it down for each pin. And then we'll do that for every hole. And our coach will, the night before the tournament, put it all on a piece of paper, like a yardage book piece of paper, and he'll write the numbers and which direction it's sloping. And we take that out onto the course, and whenever I have a putt that's 6 feet and it looks pretty straight, I'm thinking, this looks like it might snap, but am I really sure about that? I look at the numbers and I say, oh, this is a 1.7 right. And those numbers mean nothing to anyone, not even me. But I know 1.7 is a lot, so it's probably breaking a lot. I have it calibrated in my head. I don't even know what the units are. It's just a 1.7.
On your electric scale.
Yeah.
What's a little bit?
So anything below 1 is probably inside the hole from 4 feet.
Okay.
It depends a little bit course to course. But most of the time, if it's over 1, that's breaking a good amount. If it's under 1, then center firm.
And is this the only tournament you did that for? Or you do it for other ones as well?
We did it for the entire spring.
Wow.
Yeah, we did it. The Emory team did it before us, and our coach is close with their coach. Like, our teams see each other a lot. We know those guys. And so our coach was like, hey, do you think this is something that would help you? And I'm a numbers guy, so I was like, yes. Wow. Show me. I want to see.
So you guys are making custom graphs and maps of the greens.
Kind
like
of.
Like, with the whole locations. That is really cool.
It's not that fancy, but it's... It helps. It helped me.
Fancy.
It's a little extra. I can understand where people would be that. I mean, even people on our team were like, this is a waste of time. I can't believe you guys do this. Just read the greens. Like, how hard is it?
Yeah.
But for me, it helped a lot.
So how did the tournament go? Who were you paired? What teams were you paired with?
Oh, geez.
That's all right.
Okay, we were paired with Husson and Washington and Jefferson College. Neither of those teams made the cut, but we did.
So there's a cut after how many days?
Yeah. It's 72 holes with a cut after 36.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you guys shoot to make the cut?
We, as a team, I think we were 19. Oh, yeah. I think we were 19 or 23 over. Okay. We were something like that.
Which is good enough for, like, what place?
We were probably around 12th, 10th, that sort of ballpark, maybe just a little bit better.
Did you guys have a goal going in?
To make the cut was my goal.
Did the team have a stated goal?
We did not have, like, a goal on a piece of paper. To be honest, throughout the whole year, making the tournament was our goal, and then we got there, and no Carnegie Mellon team had ever made the cut before, so then...
Like, let's make the cut.
In my mind, my goal was for this team to make the cut.
Yeah.
And we did that, and I was really happy about that, and it was a ton of fun.
It's awesome.
Is there a different feeling making the cut and then playing, you know, playing on the quote-unquote the weekend? Is there like,
yeah,
oh, can
yeah.
you enjoy it a little bit more? Or?
I don't know. I don't know if I can enjoy
it. Is it like
a
nice
more.
Bookmark to the end
it was,
of the season?
So kinda? We, like I said, we've been playing a lot of our tournaments leading up to that in sort of do or die situations. Right. Like, okay, we got to play good right now or else that could hurt us. So we got into the tournament with a cut. And we went into the second round thinking, okay, do or die again. But we were very ready to handle that situation. So that was sort of, I don't want to say business as usual because the stakes were pretty high, but we'd been in those situations before. So
yeah, you guys were seasoned for that.
When I think of a normal day at the office for our team in a tournament, it's kind of those first two rounds facing a cut. And then when we got to the last two, like I was just thinking, like, I'm going to enjoy my walk around the course. Like,
seriously.
I'm just going to play some golf. Yeah, I played a lot worse those last two rounds. I don't know what caused it, but it was I'm just glad we made the cut. That was my goal, and we did that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So excited. Like, what are now you looking forward to the rest of your college? You got 2 years left.
I mean, I want to do more of the same. My goals looking forward now for the team are to make the cut in the next two NCAA tournaments and to keep doing better. I think as a team we can get top five if we really play well. Our team's only getting better. And I mean, top four gets a trophy. So if I could put some hardware in my coach's office, top four in a national championship, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. What is your favorite part about golf?
Oh, that's a large question.
Yeah, that's enough. You know,
yeah.
Enough Carnegie Mellon. Let's get a bigger picture.
Yeah. My favorite part about golf, hitting the ball far.
Far. So what's your swing speed with driver?
126.
126?
Yep.
So throw out some numbers for the listeners, so, like what some of your yardages are.
Well, okay. Let's get there. In a second. Matthew Wolf, who like has the, you know, big friend of the podcast, George Gank's number one student. he's like the fastest swinger on tour, and he has 130 miles an hour swing
he's
speed.
He's the fastest swinger on tour?
I think so.
Well, Champ's right.
Oh, Champ
too.
Might be up there.
He's like just under 130.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, you know those like, they do like the stress plates and stuff on the mm-hmm. ground? Like Matthew Wolf has like all the records of like speed and like how much he's using the ground and all that stuff.
That's
so,
crazy. Makes sense.
But you're like close. Wow, 126.
Yeah. I mean, if I swung out of my shoes, I could get into the 130s, but when I just take my normal driver swing, it's 126, 125
and
consistently.
What's that carry?
Yeah, that's it's a 300-yard carry consistently, and depending on my bounce, I can get anywhere up to 340. And when I really put my back into one, I can get some carry numbers up into the 340s.
You should start putting your legs into it a little bit.
Yeah. You know, but I played a tournament at a course that was very wide open this last spring. And I told my coach, like, hey, I'm going to swing for the fences out here. I'm just going to have some fun off the tee. And I was just absolutely winding up on all these tee shots. And I think I probably averaged 320 carry that week. Uh-huh. So I can,
When I want to, I can put it out there.
Well, I'm a tall guy, so that helps me generate swing speed.
I guess so. Can you putt?
Yeah, I can putt.
All right.
I would driver show putt for dough.
I guess so.
Made that 20-footer.
Yeah, that when it counted.
When it counted.
What clubs do you have in your golf bag?
So I have a TaylorMade M1 driver, an M3 3-wood. Fun fact, I'm trying to break that driver so I can get a new one from TaylorMade for free. Okay. If you swing fast enough and you break the face,
yeah,
they'll usually just send you a new one.
We have a guy on our team. He's broken three pings, yeah, cracked this spring. So
I'm trying to upgrade to an M5. yeah, I have a Strixon 2-iron, which I love. I have Callaway X-forged wedges, Vokey wedges.
X-forged irons.
And then a TaylorMade Daytona Series Indie putter.
Got it. I was saying, if you don't have Callaway, we won't be able to release this podcast contractually.
We do have the Callaway irons.
Big Callaway Academy here. So.
What ball do you play?
Callaway.
The Chrome Soft X?
I don't actually play Callaway.
Does your team give you golf balls with the Carnegie Mellon little logo?
What is
that logo? It's like a dog.
Yeah,
right, the Knights.
It's on my hat for the listeners, but it's a little dog in a what looks like a shield.
So cool,
and it's red and black.
And what is your mascot? Sure. What's that called?
So our mascot's the Tartans, which is a stupid mascot.
A tartan is like a color of fabric,
basically.
Okay,
but this on the logo is a Scottish Terrier. Wearing a tartan.
So it's a Scottish school?
Yeah, Andrew Carnegie.
Carnegie.
Yep, that's cool. How they insist on saying it.
Have you ever been to Scotland?
I have not. Bucket list, I want to go.
Yeah. I feel like the team should be obligated to go.
You're doing all this for the school. Have them fund a
trip. You should say that. That might be in the works.
Come on.
Might be.
All right. Well, I'm all out of questions. This was... You know, we haven't gone over an hour in one of these a long time. Jansen, you got anything else?
It was awesome to listen to hear you talk about your college experience and like how you guys like thrive in that stressful situation, like do or die, and how you guys rally. And I guess like one final question I would have is like is the team like pretty close? Like the culture of you guys, like you guys push one another. Like obviously you must be all. A close group of guys and have a lot of similar interests to be able to perform like that when it counts. And is there like stuff that you guys like have things you do before every tournament to fire each other up or what is that kind of like?
We have a great dynamic on the team. Those are some of my closest friends. I'm living with with all golfers next year there. I love those guys. We get along really well. We don't have any rituals. We have a lot of inside jokes. Follow at Team 79Watch on Instagram. Shout out to the brand. We get along a lot. We're really close.
What is That's Team 79Watch? What's the story?
You're going to have to follow the Instagram page to find out.
Why did it, like, what's the name come from?
So, you know, when you're a worse golfer, breaking 80 is a big deal.
Yeah.
Going from an 80 to a 79 is a huge milestone.
It's a big deal for everyone.
Big deal.
Yeah, come on.
It's a good round. Yeah.
So we use that, or one of the guys on who allegedly is on my team made a page basically congratulating PGA Tour golfers for breaking 80 when they shot 79. Naturally, when Tiger Woods breaks 80, he played a horrible round, but you treat him like any other golfer. Like, congratulations, you made that last putt to break 80.
I love it. Rory.
Great job.
Just shot 79 at the Open.
He was on the Instagram page. He got a shout out.
Check it out. Yep. All right. Very cool.
I would recommend. It's a funny one.
Okay. I thought of one last question. What, like, not just in college, but just for your life, what would, like, success in golf mean to you?
That's a question I don't exactly have the answer to. I think... If I could finish my college golf season playing at a very competitive level, both individually and as a team, and then if I could maintain the skill I have now as an amateur golfer into the future and play amateur tournaments whenever I had the time, and was able to grow up further without losing what I've worked so hard to achieve, then I'd call that a success. If I can be in my 30s and still play the Illinois Open, that would be awesome for me.
Sweet.
So awesome. that's the late future.
Is that the next thing? Are you in this year?
I am, yeah.
Well,
qualified out of Deerfield with
boom.
Coach Jansen.
What'd you shoot?
I shot 1 over 73.
Oh, so you kicked Jansen's ass.
Yeah. He was in, like, he didn't have to
wait
around.
You were easily in. Jansen was waiting around.
He was on the first page of the leaderboard.
All right. Yeah, well, he got to play in the playoff.
Come on, don't you know that would make one-year-old coaches feel bad if you...
If I beat him?
You beat him by that much.
No, we
five.
Both, see, we both qualified.
Oh, yeah, it didn't matter.
It's a binary
you
qualifier.
Start
just the qualifier. Now, yeah, now...
Now we're playing.
Well, now Jansen's actually practicing.
Now I'm fired up.
Oh, yeah. Now he's dialed in.
Yeah, I haven't seen him make a bogey in 3 weeks. Oof, so
I'm
you
scared.
Better watch out.
I was
out.
Walking up to the other like four guys the other day at practice. So I was like, can't wait to bring it. Oh, I was talking some smack already, but it'll be a good time. It's cool to have a lot of TGP guys in that tournament. So
it's going to be a fun one this year.
How many TGP people are in this? Because this is probably the last time we'll do one of these before it.
Well, Wyatt made it. Wyatt's a former M360 guy.
He's
one of
alum.
The OGs as well. So he's back from college. He's in it. And then Sam and
Danny's in it.
And Danny. Yeah. So I think five or six?
Five confirmed as of this moment.
Yeah.
Wow. We need some, like, what are we playing for?
You just like, some side bets?
Something. I'm just like, we got a lot of people in this. There's got to be something on the line.
I don't know.
The lowest score comes on the podcast next time.
Wow.
That would be good.
That'd be good. Yeah, I'd be.
Illinois Open recap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jensen, you can come no matter what.
No.
Because I don't know Wyatt. Like, I'm not going to do a podcast with just me and Wyatt. Like, no offense.
Wyatt's
I mean, I'm
guy.
Sure he's a good hang. I like have no doubt that I'd be able to talk to him. But
he doesn't have the dynamic.
Yeah, yeah.
Jansen and Andy dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Are you, Jansen, are you, like, if I were you, I'd be like scared to death that like all these kids are going to beat me. Do you care?
No. Well, the reason why I even entered in or to do it was for myself. I'm not doing it for anybody else. Like I wanted to challenge myself. It was a goal of mine at the beginning of the year. And so it's just a little side project. Not, I shouldn't call it like a side project, but you know, it's for me. So as well as I want to play, and yes, do I want to like lose to the students or whatever? You know, I don't really care. I'm just glad that I'm kind of pursuing one of my goals.
I mean, if you're a good coach, you will lose to your students. Right?
Yeah,
that's all it means, right? If they'll beat you, it's your job to make them good,
make
not
them
you.
Feel good, yeah.
Well, not feel good, just play good. Yeah, so, like, yeah.
That's right.
Well, cool. Good luck to both of you. Yeah. Jason, good luck in the fall and spring season.
Yeah, thank you.
Go get that hardware.
Yeah, go get that top four. We'll be rooting for you. And we'll talk to you guys.
Clean contact.
I hit it again. Because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment. Or the moment defines you.
Well, here it comes.